Hello and welcome to your weekly installment of Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age. In case you're new, the goal of our program is to inspire you to make your middle years, age 40 to whatever, the upper age limit of middle age is totally up to you, to make those the best years of your life. A secondary goal is to revitalize the lagging business or alternative collective enterprise where you earn a living. It will be difficult, if not impossible, to gain a positive outlook on life if your workplace has subpar performance, routinely stresses you out, and remains mired in negativity. Hello, I'm your host, Roy Richards. I'm here to assure you that daily life in your 40s, 50s, even 60s can be both joyful and productive, but it's all contingent upon a positive outlook on life. Except for a fortunate few, most of us are too young to retire, and anyway, at present, we don't have either the desire or the accumulated net worth to do so. Therefore, assuming you are fortunate enough to have a job, you must report for work 5 or more days a week, 8 hours or more a day. Far too many of us work is not a pleasant experience. The July 11, 2012 Wall Street Journal reports on a risk management company's polling of more than 32,000 employees at mid- to large-sized companies around the world. The polling was done in February and March of this year. Fewer than half of the respondents said they have confidence in their senior managers, and only 44% believe managers are sincerely interested in employee well-being. Many employees also admitted to feeling stressed, anxious, and burned out on the job. 30% said they are bothered by excessive pressure at work, and only 47% said their company makes it possible to maintain a healthy work-life balance. Perhaps even more disturbing, just one-third of employees polled said their employer does a good job of providing opportunities for advancement. We all know how tough the business environment is today. Since the 2008 recession began, most of us have come to realize we're only one paycheck away from unemployment. Employees' deep discontent may also stem from the fact that many companies are attempting to accomplish more with fewer employees, risking a decline in performance from fatigue, stress, and anxiety. Then again, much of the discontent may stem from the simple fact that many employees work for bad bosses. Does it seem like more and more these days changes are continually forced on you and you are not rewarded or even recognized for stellar performance? That's not pleasant, especially if you're over 45. You may have several years invested in your present employer with a pension plan and health care benefits you can't afford to forfeit. Also, you may have strong ties to your present community. Even if you could locate a comparable job, you'd probably have to relocate and uproot your family. And what about your spouse's job? What if you have a job and a career you admire, but you report to a bad boss who you simply can't stand? In a related issue, perhaps you yourself are an executive, middle manager, or supervisor who has employees reporting to you. Are you a good boss or a bad boss to them? Do you routinely respect and honor those men and women who report to you? Well, our guest is here to discuss why jobs today are becoming more competitive, more brutal, and harder to navigate. Our guest is Rick Conlow, a highly qualified to enlighten us on this subject. Rick is a senior partner at WCW Partners, a performance improvement company helping business leaders to become better bosses. Rick and his partner, Doug Watzebaugh, have more than 50 years combined business experience, and they are co-authors of 10 business improvement books, including their latest Superstar Leadership Model, Good Boss, Bad Boss, Which One Are You? Hello, Rick, and welcome to our program.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Let's get right into the questions here. In your book, you indicate that 50% of all bosses fail. Please tell us why, and also, how do you define failure?
Well, that's a great question, and we did some research, and we found 12 management derailment studies that showed that managers fail on average 50% of the time. So, for example, That would mean 7.5 million managers go to work in the U.S. every day, and they're doing a poor job working with the employees, causing some of those dismal statistics that you were talking about earlier, Roy. And the main reason they fail is they have poor people skills. They're not very good at setting clear expectations and goals. They're not very good at understanding how to deal with conflict or building teams or communicating effectively. And the combination of those things create a dismal, poor working environment that certainly does not bring out the best in people.
And I assume that's why so many employees hate their bosses.
Well, that's absolutely why. In fact, we came up with a list, the top 10 list of why employees hate their boss, and number one on the list was the bosses were poor communicators. I won't go through all of them, but number two was their bosses were dishonest. Number three is that they favored brown nosers. In other words, they picked out certain people that they treated well, and the rest of them they didn't. The other one is they had poor plans. And then the other, number five, that I'll share with you is that the bosses were more critical. They didn't give much positive recognition. And again, that doesn't make people want to go to work. Do you know the number one reason why people go to work in America, Roy?
No, what's that?
They have to. The alarm went off and they got to get up. It's
good
not
point.
Because they want to.
Yeah. Well, if I'm a boss, are there like early warning signs that can tip me off that I am not popular or that I may be losing respect from the employees that report to me? How do I know I'm a bad boss?
That's a great question. And I think what you have to look at is what's happening in your division, department, or work unit. Oftentimes, high employee turnover is an indicator that you've got a problem, and it often comes back to you as the manager. So in other words, if you've got a revolving door, you've always got people quitting or you have to fire somebody, it's usually because you're doing something wrong as the boss. Second thing is look at what the teamwork is in the department. If people aren't working well together, then the chances are you haven't created a culture that helps encourage that. And so, again, you have to look in the mirror and look at yourself. And then the third thing is just look at your bottom line results. Now, it's true. Sometimes managers and bosses can, who aren't very good can get great results for a while, but they can't keep them consistently. And so if your results are inconsistent, they are good one time, poor another time, and it looks like they're continually going downhill, then you got to look in the mirror again as a boss and say, you know what, I need to do something about this.
Yes, and other things that I've come to mind, and I've mentioned some of these in my book, Wake Up Captain and Crew, office politics become more important than mission. Sometimes the whole office divides up into armed camps. Another problem is if you really don't know your subordinates, you may just treat them as cogs in a machine and not really know what they are as persons, what their personal interests are, what track they want to be on at this point in their careers. It can be so impersonal, and so much of the communication, I think, sometimes is just superficial and not really seem very genuine.
Exactly. And those are great points you mentioned. If you take those things that you talked about, the office politics or, more concerned about what's going on for you, it often comes down to is the bosses are more self-concerned and they're not really focused on the needs of others. If I don't know my subordinates or the employees that work with me, what their needs are, what their goals are, what their strengths and areas for improvement are, if I don't really understand that, and maybe a little bit about them personally, their families and the things they're interested in, I'm not really concerned about them. It comes down to a lack of care. And I found this. Employees, if they know you don't care about them as a person, they're not going to do their best job. But if they know you care, they'll do just about anything for you.
Yes, I think there's a thin line of obviously prying into employees' personal affairs, but on the other hand, knowing just where they stand in their personal lives and what motivates them. Like an employee that, say, just broke up in a marriage may want to dedicate more time to the job or less time to the job. It's really up to the boss to take enough interest in their employees' lives that they know what's going on, at least, without prying.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, you bring up a good point. We're not counselors. We're not therapists. We're not psychologists as managers. But in a sense, you do have to be a good listener. And employees, if they know that you care about the relationship, they'll bring up some of the things that are challenging them. And just, you know, have somebody to talk to. And as a manager, if we're a good listener, at least they can vent a little bit, get it off their backs a little bit, and know that we're willing to invest the time to hear them out. Then we can direct them maybe somewhere else to get other help for that. But it'll affect what goes on the job. What happens off the job affects what happens on the job, and what happens on the job affects what happens off the job. It all goes together. And it's all about the personal relationship. So, you bring up a great point.
Just interject a funny example of what I'd call a bad boss. It was a company president I heard about. I was talking to an employee of this insurance company, and he always tried to interject himself into the daily lives of employees, but he didn't do it effectively. And what this fellow said is that whenever the president came around, he and his co-workers would pick up the phone and pretend they were on the line so that they wouldn't have to talk with him. I always got a kick out of that.
Unbelievable.
Well, in your book, you define seven different kinds of bad bosses. Please describe these so that our listeners can decide just which kind of bad boss they work for.
All right. Well, we'll go through those. Number one on the list is the dictator. In other words, the dictator is all about it's my way or the highway.
Oh, yes, I've known
yes,
a few
and
of those.
I'm sure we've all had a boss or two kind of like that. Also on the list is the micromanager. And the micromanager, of course, treats you like children and always looking over your shoulder. They want to be in on every decision, won't let you do your job. And when you do your job, if it's not the way they want it done, they'll tell you to do it their way. Then there's the criticizer, which I kind of alluded to earlier, and the criticizer is the one, of course, this has nothing but bad news. No matter how well you did something, they're going to find something wrong with it and, of course, criticize you about it. Then there's the liar. I remember one manager in an organization, with his team he was good. He built a pretty good team, but with other departments, he'd always tell stories about customers and lied about it and then wondered why nobody would work with his team. But he was causing the contention all the time. Then there's another type of bad boss today that's illegal, and that's the harasser.
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of discrimination or sexual innuendos, that is not allowed in the workplace today, but unfortunately we read about that in the newspapers too often.
Yeah, we do.
Then there's the bully in the workplace, Roy. The bully kind of reminds me of a manager who said this. He said, my philosophy as leadership is to keep beating them until the blood runs dry.
That's a real effective.
That he thought he
really
was a motivator,
you
know? It's
the
unbelievable.
The carrot and the stick, that's definitely the stick.
carry a big stick and hit them with it, I guess. And you know what? It may motivate people short-term out of fear, but long-term, people want to look for another job.
Well, of course they do.
Absolutely. And then the seventh area is, I just call it Mr. Nice Guy. And what I mean by that is people like them. They're polite and courteous, and they seem to get along with other people. But what they aren't very good at is getting decisions made or following through or backing their team up. So people like them, but they never get anything done, and they can't count on them. And that happens. So it's almost
like
the managers
They don't like him so well when they get laid off because their department didn't accomplish anything.
Exactly. And we've seen way too much of that today, unfortunately.
Well, while we're on the subject of bosses, there are some good ones out there. Please describe some of the positive characteristics that are commonly found in good bosses.
Absolutely. In fact, in our research, we went out and looked at what do the bad bosses do. But we also wanted to look at what do the best leaders do. And we found, first of all, that they have an underlying attitude, first two things. One is integrity, so they're honest in what they do. And sometimes all that means in the workplace is doing what's right and fair and following through on your commitments. And then the second thing is a genuine interest in caring about people. In other words, their philosophy is, I want my people to be successful, and if I help them be successful, then I'll be successful. And notice the focus is on the people first. Then, Roy, it just comes down to some basic leadership skills that we probably all have heard about in the past. For example, setting clear expectations and goals, communicating effectively, providing training and coaching opportunities, adapting your leadership style to the needs of others, having a focus on continuous improvement, doing a good job in training. And all these strategies together, if the leader is consistent, and then, of course, as I said, they have integrity and caring in their approach to what they do, it's going to make a difference on performance, because these are the things most managers don't do or don't do very often.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's get into age-specific type question. Let's say that I'm 53, and I really want to keep my job, but my boss makes me miserable. Can you suggest strategies for dealing with a bad boss? How do you give the boss the message without getting yourself in trouble? And it's somewhat like telling someone they have bad breath, only worse. You know, in a company I used to work for in California, one time a subordinate left a bottle of Listerine on her boss's desk.
Oh, wow.
But what would I do if I was, middle-aged, I really needed to keep the job, and I liked the company, but I was having problems with my boss. How do I get that message across to them?
Well, the very first thing I would say is you got to look at yourself. I use the acronym INK. You got to INK yourself. Yeah. And each letter stands for a certain thing. I stands for invest in yourself. N stands be notable. And C stands for create a plan. Let's go back to invest.
Yeah.
The very first thing you have to do with a bad boss is make sure that you're doing the very best job you can, because a bad boss becomes intolerable, and Ivan the Terrible, if you will, when we're doing a poor job. They'll be all over you continually. But if you do a good job, maybe a great job in what you're doing, they will leave you alone and spend more time dealing with other people. So what do I mean by invest in yourself? Keep learning. Always be reading books, going to seminars. If your company provides training programs, take them. And if they don't, take some on the outside, spend a little money to do it. It doesn't cost a whole lot to go to a community college. Or if you go on the web, there's a lot of free webinars that you can take. And here's what I found in the workplace is if I increase my learning over time, I'll increase my earning. So the first thing is do a great job. The bad bosses will leave you alone. Second thing is notable, the N on Inc. And what that's about is you got to be genuine in all that you do. Go above and beyond, provide great service, be a good team player, play well with other people that you're working with, and you'll become the kind of person that others can count on. Besides that, it affects your character about what you're doing.
Yeah.
When you're doing all you can and going the extra mile, you get that attitude about yourself that, hey, you're getting it done, you know, and it affects your outlook on how you deal with other people and how you deal with customers. Warren Buffett said years ago that it takes years to create a reputation but minutes to lose it. And what he's talking about is your whole approach to the work that you do, how you deal with people, and, of course, your career. Then the C in Inc. stands for create a plan. Look, companies today have to have a strategic plan to look at where are they going and how are they going to get there and how are they going to stay competitive. Every employee in a company, if their boss doesn't set a plan with them, and usually bad bosses won't do that, you got to have your own plan, a plan for how you're going to do your job, your goals, your action steps. Go to your boss, be proactive, and show your boss, here's what I'm thinking about for my goals. Here are some action steps. What do you think? Most of the time, the bad bosses are going to go, whoa, they're going to be shocked that you did it. And they'll give you a compliment, and then they'll leave you alone some more. And then the other part of that plan is, what do you do if you have to leave this job? You got to be thinking, not that you want to, if you like the job, but you got to be thinking that way in case it happens.
Yeah, and if you build up enough positive interactions with various other people in the company, there often are other opportunities within the company, even if it's out from under your present boss, I would think.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. If you build good teamwork internally, You'll have relationships with other people that if for some reason it doesn't working out in your department, they're going to come to you with opportunities elsewhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I often like to talk about if you're really stressed out at work, taking yourself a mental vacation. I know it's not always easy if you have to stay on the job, but, you know, divorce yourself as best you can from the stress and think about what you really want to do with the rest of your life and your career, and then come back and examine what the difference between your ideal position and your present position and what could be done within your present employer to provide the kind of career and opportunities that you're looking for, and discuss with your boss, like you say, and see what you can't work out.
Absolutely. And, you know, that goes back to that creating that plan that I talked about. And just not enough people do that. They usually wait for their managers to ask them to do that. And I found time and time again, employees that get ahead within companies take that initiative. In fact, I had one manager I worked with in a company in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and he was 13 straight years. He was number one in sales, customer service, and employee retention. In fact, he had a waiting list. People wanted to work there, but he couldn't hire them all. And he said the number one thing he looks for in employees is those who take initiative. And that's what you were describing earlier, Roy, and what I was talking about.
Yeah. Well, on the other side of the coin, say I'm a manager at 36 and have not had much success motivating my seasoned subordinates, several of whom are at least 10 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Despite my relatively young age, how do I gain respect and capture the hearts and minds of the baby boomers on my team, the 48 to 65-year-olds or whatever they are?
Now, here's what I say about the age differentiation. Age becomes a factor if we're not a good leader. Age does not become a factor if we are a good leader. And
you say it's so true. That is very true.
Absolutely. And let's go to this 36-year-old manager.
Yeah.
As I would say, you have to be a student of the game. And if you want your people to be better at what they do, you have to be better as a leader first.
Yeah.
All great performance begins and ends with the manager, because the greatest impact on the performance of employee is not the CEO or president of the company, it's their direct supervisor.
Yeah.
And so what I would say to this person, you've got to start studying. You need to buy a book and read it. Get my book, The Superstar Leadership Model, Good Boss, Bad Boss, Which One Are You? There's lots of other great leadership books out there. Read as many as you can. And go to seminars. Look on the Internet. You can go on the Internet through e-zine articles and find all kinds of free articles on there about different areas of leadership where you can get some insight on how to be a better leader. And as you start trying things and learning things and changing some of the things that you do, you'll have a more positive impact on employees younger than you and employees older than you, and then it doesn't become an issue.
This is exactly the opposite. I heard this story recently. The lady's probably close to 50. She's been she works for a retail operation, done an outstanding job there for years. She got a new boss who was quite a bit younger. He came in, the first thing he said to her was, "Your 23 years with the company mean absolutely nothing to me." In other words, you know, you're going to have to prove yourself to me right away and blah, blah, blah. And that, of course, instead of respecting and honoring her service to the company and asking for advice on certain matters, since this fellow was obviously new in his job and had some things to learn, and he did just the opposite and acted like he had all the answers and she better just toe the line.
Yes, I was in New York City here a couple weeks ago, and I was meeting with the chairman of the board and president of a $6 billion company. And he said this, that many young leaders today have not had the depth of experience and training and coaching and mentoring that many leaders in the past have had, mainly because we've got a more fast-paced world today with all the electronics and instant communication.
Yeah.
And that lack of depth of experience are causing kinds of things that you just described, which alienates people and does not motivate them to be the best. No wonder our economy is languishing at 1.5% growth, when the fact of the matter is, yes, You know, in 2008, we had a difficult, a great recession there.
Yeah.
But today, we could double or triple our growth rate if managers understood how to motivate and inspire people.
Yes, and crying over spilt milk back in 2008 is really getting us nowhere.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of old news.
Yeah,
the new news is, what are you going to do today? And I say the leaders change, because I believe employees can accomplish incredible things. There are no greater workers in the world than what we have in this country.
Yeah.
And they can have the highest productivity in the world as if they had the positive work environment. But unfortunately, we're creating walls between leadership and employees by how we're treating the employees.
What amazes me is some of the statistics you cited on your website regarding how incompetent most managers are today. For example, I think you said that 67% of them fail to set, communicate, or agree with their employees on performance goals for their subordinates. It's
yeah.
no wonder that neither the boss nor the employee look forward to periodic performance reviews when they don't even know what their objectives are. And 91%, you said, of employees would like more recognition for a job well done. I mean, how difficult is it to pat somebody on the back when they do a good job and acknowledge what they've done is really excellent?
You know, that's so true. Those two statistics you mentioned are part of what we call the manager's report card. And unfortunately, there's more dismal statistics like that, and I won't go through them. But the point of it is, unfortunately, leaders tend to have an attitude that says, hey, I hired them, and they better do their job or I'll get someone else.
Yeah, that's a great motivation.
Yeah, and it doesn't motivate anybody to be their best. It creates resentment, disenchantment, poor productivity, poor customer service, and then companies wonder why they're struggling in the marketplace. Well,
yeah.
They've created it as leaders. Now, the good news is the best leaders are opposite of that. You know, they
yeah.
do the training, they do the coaching, they communicate, they empower people. You know, they give them room to make a decision. They get them involved in process improvement teams. They set goals with them, not for them, or never
yeah.
tell them what they are. And then they get the results.
And they give
it pays
them
off, and it doesn't have to take forever either.
No, and they give them a little discretion to manage their own work days so long as they meet targets that are set for them, instead of micromanaging like you said the bad managers do.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was also amazed at the general dissatisfaction and the lack of loyalty and time wasted on the job that you cited. I think on your website you suggest that 80% of employees said they will look for a new job once the economy improves. And the other thing that amazed me was I think you said only 50% of average employee hours at the workplace are actually spent doing the job.
Well, we have some challenges. And again, I go back to the leader as setting the tone for
yeah.
the department or the company or the division. All employees have a responsibility to do a good job and to serve their customers well and to, you know, provide good quality in the work that they do. I
yeah.
believe in that. They should be accountable to that. However, they're accountable for themselves. Managers are accountable for the whole team. So
yeah.
they create the tone for how well people are going to do. And the truth is, only a small percentage of people can operate most effectively without supervision. So the
yeah.
supervisors, the direct manager, has a tremendous impact on that bottom line result of what's happening in an apartment. So if employees are goofing off on the job, chances are the manager has created an environment that encourages that, either because they're goofing around or they're treating everybody poorly. If employees want to go get another job because they don't like the current one, because they have a bad boss, you know, the manager needs to look at themselves in the mirror and say, what can I change so people want to stay here? And
yeah.
let me ask you, Roy, if people say, hey, I'm going to go get another job when the economy improves, what kind of job are they doing in the one they have now?
That's a good question. I wouldn't
probably
say
not
they're
very good.
At maximum performance.
Exactly. So
yeah.
we always go back to, we say to the leader, if you want your people to be better, if you need to improve results, you have to be better. Be a
yeah.
student of the game. Keep learning. Make some changes. And I know changes can be hard, but they aren't that hard, and you make some changes. It's amazing the difference can make in a short period of time.
Well, if you now hold or desire to attain a leadership role in your company, how best can you earn employee respect along with outstanding performance results? Tell us a little about your book, Superstar Leadership Model, and how a listener can become a superstar leader.
Well, they can get our book, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or on our website at WCWPartners.com. And what the book is really is a 31-day game plan to teach you the basics of leadership, from setting goals to training to dealing with conflict to building teams to creating a high-powered work environment to handling performance issues. And it gives you a new topic every day so that
I
you
like
can
that.
Read it, study it, and then there's application exercises so you can work on it. We also have a companion workbook that goes with it so they can further work on the application. One of the keys to success, to being a superstar leader, is the consistency of implementing excellent leadership strategies and the passion and the care in which you do it.
I like that, one step at a time. Instead of trying to absorb everything in one setting, you do it over 31 days and accomplish in your mind full understanding of, and practice of that one skill or task that you're talking about that day. That really sounds like an interesting concept.
Yeah, you can't do it all at once, but you can do one thing at a time and make a difference. And that's the approach we're taking with this.
Well, you know, we could talk about good and bad bosses for hours, but unfortunately we're almost out of time. And tell listeners again how to – I know your website is very good, and you also you offer a whole bunch of books and self-study group training manuals and other performance resources. And Rick also offers his services as a motivational speaker at your next company event or as a coach, customized coach, consultant, or trainer. How do they get in touch with you again if they'd like to use your services or learn more about your book or other resources?
Our website, Roy, is WCWPartners.com.
Yeah.
And we've got a toll-free number they can call, Roy, at 888-313-0514.
Well, I hope you got that, because I strongly endorse the WCW Partners objectives. Let me mention that their organization improvement objectives are very similar to one of our objectives here at Middle Age Renewal Training. And in my latest book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines, is all about recreating and re-energizing lagging enterprises, their leadership and employees top to bottom, midstream. And I urge you to preview this book and obtain a free gift by visiting our website also after you've visited the WCW worksite. And what Rick has to offer, our website is www.middleagerenewal.com. Rick, thanks so much for appearing today on our show. And I trust you as a listener gained insight into how you as a leader and those you work with and for can prosper in their hours on the job and actually have a good time while earning a living. It is possible, you know. Next week, we'll shift gears again and talk about overcoming exhaustion and fatigue at middle age, and our guest will be off to the Swiss Alps in September at age 55, and she's a woman. I guess I'll probably get in trouble for that last remark. But this certainly is in line with our program's challenge to wake up to life in your middle years. Until next week, this is Roy Richards, your human alarm clock, saying thanks again for listening, and please don't forget, your boast years are still ahead.